Hi, I'm John Nerrell, and welcome to the Mid-Career GPS Podcast. If you're feeling stuck in your career and overwhelmed by what steps to take, I can help you. As an executive and career transition coach, I help my clients prepare, position, and promote who they are and what they do to show up and find a job they love or love the job they have. It's time to start building your mid-career GPS. So let's get started. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. I've got another great guest for you today. But before we get started, I have a question I want to ask you. Have you ever been laid off from a job unexpectedly and then wondered what's next? Now, we know as mid-career professionals that, sad but true, this is not an uncommon occurrence, especially in light of the pandemic. And as jobs begin to open up and more people are returning to work and navigating their mid-career GPS into a new position or a career pivot is something that will undoubtedly be an interesting journey. And for some of you, it may be easy, and for others, it might be pretty challenging. One thing I've said to you time and time again on this podcast is that we know that our career paths are nonlinear and they're messy, and we embrace that. Now, I'm excited to welcome a guest to my podcast today who knows this whole mid-career journey only too well. Amy Landry is a senior compliance and privacy specialist at Cardinal Innovations Healthcare, a provider of managed care services for members and their families in North Carolina. Prior to joining Cardinal Innovations, Amy spent 12 years working for multiple ethics and compliance vendors. Today, she's the author of a data privacy and security compliance e-learning course with Peak Compliance Training and blogs about her decision to make a career shift from working for a vendor to an in-house compliance post. Amy says she's a firm believer in continuous learning and is evidenced by her active certifications. She's earned her MA in International Commerce and Policy at George Mason University, and I did not know this about her, and this is fascinating to me, a double BA in International Studies in Russian at the University of Alabama. Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, welcome, John, and Roll Tide.
Right, Roll Tide, absolutely. So so I did not go to the University of Alabama, but I have some dear friends who I am very happy to say Roll Tide along with them. So I include you in that as well. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. And thank you so much for having me on this podcast. I'm looking forward to this, and let's get into it.
Absolutely. We're going to have a great conversation. And you and I have known each other for a while now, right?
Almost two years, right?
Because we did some one-on-one coaching, and then you were part of my group program, and have just really kind of just stayed in touch and followed. And I've been able to touch base and check in throughout all of the stuff that has been happening to you, which we are going to get into today, because it's such a great story in how you have navigated this particular path, if you will, on your mid-career GPS. But I love to start off with this question for my guests, which is, Amy, what did you want to be growing up?
The funny thing is I actually wanted to be a lawyer.
Okay, why?
So I've always really been fascinated to debate and you know, really look at, I really enjoyed civics. So really, I think if you take it back to eighth grade, I really just loved my civics class in eighth grade, and just learning about government and policies and how those policies, relate to businesses and people, both here in the U.S., but then, of course, around the globe. So I really was just kind of fascinated with that whole, government, working, law, policy. So I actually wanted to be a lawyer. I actually shadowed a prosecutor in the county where I went to school in. So I did a shadowing program, and I got to follow that person around for a day. I was kind of fascinated. But then the more and more I thought about it, I was like, you know what? I really don't want to be a prosecutor. Don't really want to be a defense attorney. And then at the time, though, The only other two things I knew law, you know, there was divorce and there was tax. The only thing I was like, I wasn't really, I was like, so it was a very fleeting idea. I think when I went off to college, I originally was thinking pre-law, but then the more I thought about it, I realized like, you know, I'm not going to go to law school. Again, I don't want to be any one of those four options. Little did I know there was this vast array of other areas of the law. And I'm really kind of shooting myself in the foot that maybe if I had done a little bit more due diligence and did more research, I may have stumbled upon, you know, something else like privacy, anti-bribery, antitrust. So a lot of those things that I'm actually, you know, in my field right now could have helped me possibly.
Right.
Or got me into my field a little bit faster.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting how we have these thoughts about what we think we want to do growing up. And then sometimes they come to fruition and other times they don't. So what was it that actually got you into the compliance field?
Well, definitely. I love the fact that you, and during your intro, talked about nonlinear. Mm-hmm. Because I've been hearing that a lot from a lot of my other colleagues and friends, that a lot of us have had a nonlinear career path. And I think back in the days, that was probably considered taboo. Like, you're, what do you mean you don't have your life planned out for, like, you know, the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years and the progression and what?
Exactly. Yep.
You know, so I definitely took a nonlinear path. So as you mentioned, I did about a double bachelor's an undergrad in international studies in the field of international business in Russian, because my major required you to minor in a language because it was an international focus. Mm-hmm. So I had a minor in a language, and I got really lucky. At the time, they actually dropped the requirements for a major in a language. So I was able to just a couple more classes. I think I needed to take like 4 more classes. And I was able to pick up a major instead of that minor. So that's how I have the double. So again, I really wanted to kind of keep with that international business, working business and governments, how they work together. I chose Russian because at the time when I was in school in the late 90s, you know, the Soviet Union had just started to kind of collapse, and it looked like Russia was going to become the next big market. Like, everyone wanted to get into Russia, like businesses wanted to get into Russia. So I thought it'd be a really good, you know, good really jump for me to get into an international business field or an international business job. But unfortunately, right before I graduated, Boris Yeltsin was the president of Russia at the time, or I think it was CIS at the time. And he had gone through his third coup. And so I really quickly in 1998 saw a lot of jobs openings really start shrinking and people really pulling out, like maybe we'll give it a while. We're not really sure yet. So I saw a lot of opportunities kind of, you know, dry up. And at that point I was like, okay, now what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And I'd been working in retail through college to help, you know, pay for stuff in college. So my assistant store manager, you know, knew I was coming out for graduation. And she's like, so what are your plans? And I told her, like, I really don't know. I'm kind of lost right now. And I'm not really sure. So she's like, well, you know, while you're trying to figure it out, if you want, we have a management program. So why don't you go through that? I mean, obviously there's different parts of that program. So you have to do a cycle where you work in a store as a department manager. And then you can also work at headquarters in, you know, various areas there. And I was like, well, that might be interesting. Because again, I had an international business. So I had some marketing and PR background. And I was like, well, maybe I'll do this because maybe I get a chance to kind of like work in the buying office and in marketing. You know, maybe I'll get into fashion retail. Like, maybe I'll do that. I mean, I enjoy fashion. It's one of my side hustle jobs. I like fashion. I like to know what's going on. So I was like, all right, well, I'll do that. And about 5 years later or seven, 8 years later, after being in retail for, you know, 8 years, I really was like, no, something's missing. I'm like, this is not really where I want to be. Like I wake up in the morning and I kind of dread going to work. And I'm like, if I had to fold one more stupid sweater in the right, you know, shape, I'm probably going to just pull my eyelashes out. I'm just really just bored. And at that time I decided to go back and get my master's degree. I moved back up from Virginia because I was still living in Alabama for a while. So I moved back up here to Virginia. And I was like, look, I'm going to go back and get my master's degree. Like, I got to find some way to kind of pivot. I got to pivot out of this. This is so I went and got my master's in international commerce and policy. Can see a theme.
Starting to make the connection. Yeah, absolutely.
So while I was working on my master's degree, a good friend of mine, and actually it's through my alumni chapter, actually, for Alabama, knew, you know, that I was looking for something. She knew I was going for my master's degree. We had a conversation about, you know, what I was looking for. And I was like, I really want to kind of get back into something kind of legal, you know, policy. And she actually had a former boss of hers at Sun Microsystems that had left Sun Microsystems. He was their FCPA or anti-bribery, anti-corruption law lawyer for Sun Microsystems. He left Sun before they got bought by Oracle. He left to go start his own business because he was in charge of their anti-bribery, anti-corruption training for like the longest time. So he went and left and started his own business. And obviously starting a startup, you really need help. So she put me in touch with him and we had a couple conversations about, you know, what I was looking for, what he needed help for. It was kind of a trial run. My first assignment, my first project that I got to work on with him is help him flesh out and vet an ITAR course. So an ITAR basically is a law that the U.S. government has that we can businesses cannot sell certain products, military defense kind of products to certain people or certain groups, countries. So I got to work on building that course with him and work with a client that actually had commissioned that course. So that was a really fun experience. And I think that's really what sold me. After working on that, I was like, you know what, this is fascinating. I mean, again, it captured everything I was looking for. It had the law, it had policies, it had businesses, and it had people. Everything that works together to make the world go around, it had it in there. And so I've been working in the compliance and ethics field for 13 years now.
Wow. I love how you painted this whole picture for us about how you kind of got there, right? And for anybody who is listening that has retail or restaurant experience, I firmly believe that is some of the best experience we can get in our careers. You know what it's like to work really hard and to hone your customer service skills. Mm-hmm. And retail companies like the one that you were describing, where they have some kind of leadership training, right? And to go that route and learn what leadership looks like from their lens, those are all things we get to take with us. And you and I have often talked about this, how where we are right now is based on the totality of our experiences. And we bring that as part of our value into whatever position is coming next or where we are. And so you've had a couple of big things happen to you professionally over the last year or so. And I'm wondering if we can talk a little bit about the layoff.
Yeah, I'm coming up on a year
I know.
Since the day.
I know. And you know, what I love about, one of the things I love and admire about you is the ownership of it, right? That this was a business decision and it happened and it sucked, right? But tell everybody, like, we're coming up on a year, so when this whole happened, what do you remember was going on in the world in terms of the shutdown and the pandemic a year ago?
Right. So obviously we go back to January of 2020. My direct report, when I was running the Red Fly Group, she quit. She got a better offer. So she quit in the end of 2019. So I was on this search to find somebody to replace her. And actually in January 2020, I actually had flown to the Philippines and also Hong Kong to meet with a prospect that was going to join and replace. So I was already going on, I was already over, you know, in Hong Kong, the Philippines, you know, close to, you know, Wuhan, China. And, you know, I definitely kind of got a glimpse of what was going on over there. And people were talking about it a little bit more. And obviously people were wearing masks because it's very, very like their culture that if you're sick, you wear a mask when you go into the office or you stay home. So it was really interesting, you know, the being over there and seeing how things started kind of like, what's going on? And should we be worried about this? And then obviously flying back here to the US and then in February, you know, having a conversation with my manager that I wasn't going to be able to hire my person on full time. And my other direct report that I had to have a conversation with him that we had to let him go. So in February, early March, you know, starting to see kind of like you say the writing on the wall.
Yep.
That, you know, our business was kind of struggling because we, you know, again, we were a vendor. We relied on our, you know, customers being able to pay for services. And a lot of those businesses were really starting to shrink and some of them went out of business or they had to really kind of narrow the scope of what they could be doing. So, so February, end of February, March, you know, having that, getting ready for that tough conversation with my direct report and knowing in the back of my mind that, you know, it could also happen to me. And I was hoping maybe, you know, I would get by and get through. But then, you know, when my, it was supposed to be my annual review, actually, my manager had, forwarded the meeting request to our HR rep. And I just knew, I was like, okay, it's happening.
Yeah, isn't that the worst, right? When you see the HR rep getting copied on it, you're just like, right. Oh crap.
Right. Cause you already knew what was going on in the organization, you know, what other people were saying that were happening to their team. Obviously I had to go through with my team. So I already knew that, you know, there were rumblings and I definitely understood. So I kind of came into that meeting knowing, okay, let's go. Like, just don't beat around the bush. Let's just, you know. When we had that conversation, obviously I was like, you know, they asked me at the end, you know, so do you have anything to say or anything, you know, you want to, you know, share? And I'm like, no, I totally understand it's a business decision. You know, I've been with the firm almost 7 years. I was 2 months shy or 3 months shy for my 7 year mark. With the firm, it was a business decision I understood. And I told them, like, if you gave me an option to cut my salary, if you needed, you know, I would have stayed on if you said, hey, you can stay on, but we're going to cut your salary. I was willing to do that. Mm-hmm. And obviously they were like, well, we kind of wish we knew that before, but we've already made the decision. So
right.
It's like, okay.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, obviously it's personal and it hits home, but it is also so relatable mm-hmm. to a lot of people that are out there that at this time a year ago, a lot of these conversations were happening, mm-hmm. right? Exactly. And so you come home, you tell your family, your friends, your loved ones, all this, like, here's what's happening. And we had a conversation a little bit then too and stuff, but like, In the days and the weeks that kind of progressed after that, what would you say were some of your best days and some of your worst days?
So I would have to say, obviously, that Friday, the day that it happened, was probably the worst day. That was like the lowest of low. And I remember calling my boyfriend, like I basically got off the phone and you know, and I started seeing like everything on my laptop being shut down and like I can't access things, yeah. You know? So I was like, okay, it's for real. So it was like noon on Friday and I was like, okay, all right, just breathe. And I called my boyfriend and I was like, we're talking and I'm like, I gotta tell you something. And I was like, I just got laid off. And then I think talking to him, you know, after a few minutes, it really kind of sunk into me and I just broke down crying. I mean, that's probably like, he doesn't see me crying very often.
Right.
So, and he just like sat there and we just lay on talked and everything. And then, I basically, you know, was like, I ended the call and I was like, you know, look, I'm gonna give myself the rest of the day. to take it and process it. But this weekend, I got to start making a plan. I got to start putting, you know, I got to start moving forward. And obviously after I talked to my boyfriend, I told my family, I told my friends, you know, I definitely let myself kind of wallow a little bit on that Friday, but Saturday morning I woke up and I was like, look, no more wallowing. That's it. It's done. I processed it. I cried it out. I got angry. I got mad, you know, I had a drink to like, but you know, I was like, but that Saturday morning I woke up and I was like refreshed and I was like, look, this weekend I'm going to put down a plan. I'm going to start making a plan. Like, who can I contact? What can I do? How can I get it out there? You know, how can I improve myself? Really, I just sat down and had a serious conversation with myself. What do I want to do? You know, because I had been thinking, and actually the funny thing is I actually been thinking for a while that I wanted to leave the vendor side. I've been thinking about going in-house for the longest time, but I was always maybe afraid, or I was in my comfort zone and I didn't want to mess with that and you know, take that scary leap over. Mm-hmm. I think really that was probably like the first step. Like, what do I want to do with the rest of my career? Yeah. You know, I looked at it as this an opportunity for me to reevaluate and see, okay, look, it's been a great 7 years with the Red Flag Group. It had been a great 5 years with Click. I learned a lot. I got to interact with a lot of people from different companies of all different sizes, all different industries, what their pains and what was happening. But really, what did I want to do? I've, you know, 20, 25 years left in this career of mine. What do I want to do? So I put my plan together. You know, and I was like, look, I'm going to make the jump. I'm going to go in-house, whether it's privacy, compliance, and ethics, maybe GRC on the information security. Cause I really also looked at what are those skills sets that I have? Like, what are those transferable skills that I had? Yes, I've been working for vendors. So I had, you know, information, product management, implementation, you know, so I had some kind of software, you know, some knowledge. I mean, I wasn't coding or anything, right. But yep. You know, again, I had enough knowledge and enough experience to be able to talk and understand certain things that go into software and security controls. I had some knowledge about privacy because we dealt with a lot of European clients and the GDPR, and obviously we have the CCPA here in the US. You know, compliance and ethics, again, 12 years, compliance and ethics, third party onboarding, guest travel entertainment, conflicts of interest, policies, procedures, you know, employee training on stuff. So I just really looked at all my transferable skills and all that knowledge that I had and figured out what are some of the jobs that I could apply for that I could bring all that together. And so, yeah, so I basically kind of just spent that weekend figuring out my plan and figuring out again, who can I reach out to? That was probably one of the hardest things maybe that Monday morning, is because I put a list together of everyone that I know, you know, in my network that's in the field or, you know, field adjacent, and how, you know, to kind of like put out the word. And that was probably the scariest thing on that Monday morning, is, you know, telling people in my network, my colleagues, I lost my job. Mm-hmm. And I need a huge ask from you. Do you know of anybody looking for help? I mean, I know we're all kind of suffering in the compliance and ethics space. We're all kind of in the same boat because a lot of organizations kind of really, again, started shrinking certain departments and certain functions. So, but I was like, I reached out to people I knew and I started getting the word out there. And it, at first, you know, I was scared to do it because, you know, that whole black mark, you know, like, oh, right. Off, like you must have done something wrong. It took me, that was probably the hardest thing, is like, you know, because you're very prideful, like to have a job. Like, I've always had a job since I was, you know, 16, 17 years old. I've always had, you know, some kind of job, and not to have a job. And that was really hard and, you know, and you wounded my pride a little bit. But I have to say, I quickly got over that. And, you know, by having those conversations with some colleagues who, you know, said, oh, I'm so sorry. Yes. You know, I don't know of anybody, but I'll keep you in mind if I do hear something. So, yeah.
So let me, let me just interject here for a second, because there's so many good things that you just dropped on us, right? We got to kind of hit the pause button here for a second. When you mentioned about putting this plan together and reaching out to your network and asking for help, you know, who do you know? Who can you connect me to? Which is such a great part of putting any kind of transition plan together, no matter where you are. You mentioned about, I'm just going to rephrase here, but like that stigma of that black mark about, oh, I got laid off. As you started having more and more conversations with people, what was it about getting laid off? Like, was it, in other words, did you find it was more of a common thing that was happening, or were more and more people understanding of, oh gosh, that makes sense. I'm hearing a lot about this in the news, and now I know somebody close to me. Like, what was it that maybe kind of shifted your thinking around your attitudes around being laid off and how you were messaging that to other people?
Right. No, that's definitely a good point. I mean, I definitely saw it as the spring, summer went by, that feeling that dread of having to share what happened to me really started going away. And I think it's because when I got laid off, it was pretty early on in COVID. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I got laid off in mid-April. So there was probably some people, like mostly you heard about it, restaurants and airlines. A lot of those industries got really hit really hard up front. And then as you saw the later in the spring and then the summer, other industries, you know, started having mass layoffs and furloughs. So I think as this later in the spring and summer went by, I started, you know, those conversations that I was having, people were like, you know, I was having a conversation with somebody else in the same situation I was in. So it was like, you know, two people talking about our experiences and what we're doing and how we can help, you know, like, hey, this is something that I'm doing and this helps me. Maybe it'll help you. And that's really kind of one of the reasons why I started writing my blog, because I started my blog in like July of 2020. And, you know, again, it was one of those moments where I'm like, you know, somebody suggested it to me. I saw it as a good idea, but it was also that moment of like, oh my God, dread. I'm like, I'm putting it out there to the world.
Yeah.
A, and B, are people going to find my life and my experience interesting? You know, don't want to read this. But I mean, it was my opportunity because I had, you know, I had experienced it. I've been talking to a lot of other people that had been experiencing it. And I was like, look, if I can help somebody by sharing what I'm going through to like maybe reduce that stigma or help them put their plan or figure out a pathway of like, you know, what things that they can be doing to help them, my blog served its purpose.
Yeah, it was such a great service thing for you to do and just put that out there. And not only for yourself, but for anybody who read it or the people who are following you and reading it and just kind of unlock a little bit about what was going on for you during that time. And I'll link that blog up in the show notes so people can check that out as well. But Amy, you get laid off in mid-April of 2020. How long did it take you until you landed your current position where you are now?
10 months. 10 months.
Yeah. And just when you were interviewing for this job and you were really almost coming up on a year about not being fully employed and things like that, what were some of the tips that you have that really kind of helped you navigate that whole interview process to really show up fully and be at your best when you were interviewing?
Practice. Practice and preparation. So definitely I always made sure I did my research on the company. I did my, I read the job description. I try to plan out some responses to some of the questions that I might get asked based on what the job description said. I would try to rehearse as much as possible. I would definitely try to practice looking into the camera. Because again, I mean, one of my blogs is about how do you interview in a virtual world?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I, I have had some practice of doing virtual, because when I interviewed with the Red Flag, it was all remote. Some of it was phone calls over like late night, 9 o'clock my time, you know, phone call, 9 a.m. Hong Kong phone calls. But I also had to do some, you know, Skype calls, video calls. So I had some practice, but again, that had been 7 years since I had gone through that. But practicing, you know, trying to, you know, make sure I'm looking in the camera, I'm speaking slowly, I'm showing some kind of emotion. I'm not like, so it's practice, and prepare. And just be confident in who you are. I mean, I know I have a lot to give an organization if they hire me, when they hire me. And I want to make sure they understand that. And I believe that, you know, I have a lot of value and a lot of things I can give.
I'm going to take this one step further, because I'm just going to put this out here for everybody. You're a beast. Like, when it comes to the plan that you put in place and the preparation and the networking and the contacting and the certifications and the blogging and the continual outreach, I remember as we were exchanging messages back and forth through all of that time, resilience is a word that comes to mind, because exactly what you just said. You know the value you can bring to a new organization. It was just a matter of you finding each other.
Exactly. Yeah. That law of average kind of thing. Because, you know, it is scary. Like, you know, I kept track of like who I sent out resumes to, who I contacted, who I had heard back from, who I had interviews, how many times I was told no. I mean, I kept stats. I mean, it almost was like a full-time job trying to find a job.
Yeah.
And, you know, and again, that's kind of scary too, but I kept telling myself it's a law of average game. You know, you just haven't hit your number yet. It's going to happen. It's just, you have to go through 10 more applications or two more interviews or 20 more connections and talking to somebody else. It's going to happen. It's just not the right time yet. It's not your time. Mm. So I think there's that positivity, that resiliency.
Yeah.
I know my boyfriend, we were talking, we've been obviously talking about it a lot over the past year. Cause you know, he's going through it every single day as well with me. And he was like, I don't know how you do it. Like, if it was me, I would probably not get out of bed half the time. Like, yeah. And I, you know, maybe this is something that's always been in me. I think it's part of my personality. I may have gotten it from my parents. You know, how they raised me, but I just have this firm belief, like, I'm just not going to give up. You can keep knocking me down a peg and a peg and a peg, and I keep, you know, I can hit rock bottom, but I'm going to find a way to get back up. Like, I'm just not going to be like sitting around like, oh, woe is me. I mean, I might do it for a little bit.
Sure.
There. Yeah. But, I just have this like inner drive, like, it's going to happen. I'm going to make it happen. It's going to happen.
So two questions here as we start to wrap up. It's amazing how time flies again. It's like time just flies as we do these things. The first question I have for you here is, I mean, obviously you are someone who saw some benefits in coaching and invested in coaching and things like that. What would you say to anybody out there who is curious about or considering working with a career coach and the benefits that you got from it?
So, I mean, I think one of the benefits I got was having that impartial view, you know, because obviously, you know, in your friends, your families, they're going to, you know, they'll give you some part that, you know, some of them might be a little bit more, you know, that tough talk kind of, you know, friend or family member that won't be brutally honest with you. I mean, work something the same way. You might get, you know, a manager that is kind of like looked at everything as kittens and rainbows, you know, and then somebody that tells you like everything you do is horrible. It's nice having that kind of that impartial person that you don't have day-to-day interactions with to really kind of give you a lens on here's what I see. And here are things that I think, let's talk through them that maybe if you also saw this as well, maybe that'll give you a light bulb moment. Like, oh, now I can see maybe why this manager or this person acted this way when I did this. So maybe I should think about and correct it. Or I think you have that ELI.
Yep. The Energy Leadership Index. Yep.
Energy Leadership. I mean, that was probably one of the best things I've ever, you know, done. I mean, obviously I've done the Myers-Briggs and the DISC and all those things, but I really felt like that ELI was great because, you know, I mean, I've always felt like I'm that heart person. I do things, I speak and I feel from the heart, more so maybe some from my head. So it's nice to like, you know that, yes, that is how I am. I am a feeling person, and that's not a bad thing. It's just, I have to think and remember that when I go into conversations and kind of like, look, I got to change or adjust, you know, something just a little bit to make sure that I, you know, get my, what I need to get across, and I'm not kind of butting heads and I'm not, you know, making the situation worse.
Right. Yeah.
So that would probably.
Thanks for sharing that. And so what advice would you give to anybody listening today to help them put that next piece together in their mid-career GPS?
Wow. I guess maybe, yeah, I probably have a plan, but don't feel like you have to know everything and lay everything laid out. It's okay to have this non-linear plan, whether you're in your 20s or 30s or 40s or 50s or 60s or 70s, it's okay. You know, but have a plan. That plan's going to ebb and flow, but just be flexible. And when it does, you know, shift with it. You know, don't feel like, okay, I told myself in 5 years, I want to be here and I'm not there. Well, maybe really you're not going to get there until 6 years or 7 years. You're still going to get there. It just may take you a little bit longer. Or maybe you realize that, you know what? Actually, I don't really want to go that way. I want to go over here instead. But, you know, have a plan, but be okay and be flexible to knowing that plan is probably going to change.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. That's great. So, Amy, it's been a pleasure spending some time with you, and thanks for sharing everything. Tell people out there where they can connect with you, read your blog, anything like that in terms if anybody wants to follow up with you today.
Sure. So, obviously, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter. My blog is actually on Corporate Compliance Insights. So they picked me up. I'm not publishing it as regularly as I used to. It's like once a month, but yeah, that's where my blog is. But I do have some older posts on my profile in LinkedIn.
Got it. All right. So you can connect with Amy Landry on LinkedIn, Amy, A-M-Y, Landry, L-A-N-D-R-Y, and then at Twitter at Amy_L_Landry, L-A-N-D-R-Y. I will make sure all of those are in the show notes so listeners can follow and connect and everything like that. My friend, thank you so much for sharing your story a little bit today and helping some people out. It has been a pleasure as always, and I am so happy for you and proud of you, and keep up the great work.
Thank you so much, John. It's been a pleasure working with you, and I really enjoy this conversation every time we have a conversation.
I know.
Thank you.
It's always good keeping in touch, and we will continue to do so. So everybody out there, keep building your GPS 1 mile at a time. Hope you got something great from Amy's inspirational and motivational path today. And just like she said, you know, shift with it. If you've got a plan, but keep it flexible, and just remember, you are going to get where you're trying to go. All right, everybody, take care. Make it a great day, and I'll see you next time with another great episode. If you enjoyed today's show and don't want to miss an episode, follow on Apple Podcasts or wherever you usually listen, and I'd appreciate it if you would leave a rating and review. Visit johnnarrell.com to download your free copy of the 55-Minute Career Transition Jumpstart to help you start building your mid-career GPS. And don't forget to connect with me on LinkedIn and follow me on social at John Narrell Coaching. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time.